The Daily Connect Podcast.
And it's Monday the 17th of December, and it's Stephen Scott here with you. Coming up, we're going to be talking about one of RNIB's big campaigns this year, and that was audio description and encouraging broadcasters to make audio description more available on demand. So that is something we'll be hearing about a little bit later here on the podcast. Also, Gozi Juadigwe joins us to tell us about a diversity event that is coming up. And we'll look back at the year in review with Jim Gales from the Scottish Blind Golf Disability Partnership. So that is coming up. But first, we find out about a job that blind people can do that some people, at least, might think might not be possible by a visually impaired person. And I'm talking about being a police officer. During his childhood, Inspector Nick Rook struggled with dyslexia and received little help at school. So he turned to sport and joined a karate club when he was just 12 years old. He gained a black belt in just 4 years and won competitions both nationally and internationally. Nick then went on to become a qualified karate instructor, volunteering as a coach to students with all abilities, teaching the sport to individuals who were disabled or had experienced hardships in their life, as he wanted to give them the opportunity to fulfill their potential. By 1995, he had fulfilled his own life dream of joining the police force in West Yorkshire.
Yes, that's right. I've started as all police officers do, as a police constable. You do your 2 years probationary period, and then if you choose to, you can specialise. So I originally specialised in public order on the operational support unit. Then I moved over into the firearms support unit. So I was a PC, a sergeant and an inspector on the firearms support team, sometimes going back to district between promotions. But yeah, my real sort of passion and the real place where I specialised was firearms support, so the armed response vehicles.
It was clearly an enjoyable job for Nick.
It was absolutely brilliant. I mean, again, it would be great if we had a world where there wasn't a need for such capabilities. Mm. But I've got to admit, it was my memories and the experiences I've had within the organisation and being on the department are brilliant, something I'm really sort of passionate about, and a lot of training, a lot of qualifying to stay there. But yes, absolutely loved it.
But then, tragedy struck. 4 years ago, Nick suffered health complications which resulted in him losing nearly all of his sight in his right eye, and later, his left.
My sight went overnight, basically, in that having suffered an ulcer in my eye. But I still had my left eye, but at that point, I'd been promoted to inspector, and I'd taken up a position of commander in Bradford. So, like I said, sometimes within the police, you get promoted, you go back to a district, and then you go back to your specialism. So I wasn't, at that point, doing the firearms side of stuff.
He says his condition is extremely painful and he has regular visits to the hospital for treatment. However, despite this, Nick was determined to hold on to his job at West Yorkshire Police.
I was very operational, so I was always out, even the roles, you know, that was my love, operational policing. And like I say, overnight, suddenly you sort of lose this. Again, I think what you can either do is you can either give up or think, no, do you know what? I look at this as opportunities, and it's an opportunity that perhaps I didn't want, but you've got to look on the positive side of stuff. So again, working with my supervisors, my employers, I had a workplace assessment. I was supported by my supervisor. My current line manager has been so supportive. It's been a real learning experience for both of us. I've had to sort of learn how to use the specialist equipment. Again, very office based now. And that's what it needs to be, because again, but still got, like I said, you stay in meeting with RNIB in Leeds, so we still get out. I'm not sure in a room. It's just making those reasonable adjustments and the sensible adjustments, really. Like I say, it's happened both in my private lifestyle, can't drive anymore, and also in my professional approach to working.
Coping with losing your sight affects people in different ways. Nick says dealing with it has been a challenge for him at times.
Do you know, I mean, I would truthfully say that perhaps the hardest thing I've had to deal with is the mental side of things. And you know, the sight loss occurs. It's that happens, but like I say, it's acceptance. You go over like a period of mourning where some days are harder than others. So yeah, it's a real challenge it's been. But like I say, I think sometimes you've got to sort of, it's that fight or flight time, isn't it? And you can either give up or you can think, do you know what, I'm going to give this my absolute best shot and try and inspire other people to show that actually disability, it's not a life-ending thing, and it's not always easy, you know, but it's lovely now to be in a position where I can inspire people. I wouldn't have this opportunity normally, so it's looking at the positives as best you can.
Inspector Nick Rook is now known to many as one of only a handful of registered sight-impaired officers in the UK. However, he admits that if he applied for the job he holds today, he might not be so lucky.
If I was going to join the police force today with the sight issues, there is a minimum sight requirement before you join the police force. So would I get in today as a police officer? No, I wouldn't. And you know, that's based around safety for myself, for the people I serve, for colleagues and stuff like that. But like I say, in the policing world, the great thing about it is that we've got the police officer route, but you've got the support staff route. So again, there's still those opportunities. And what I would say to anybody is give it a go. You know, don't write things off before you've actually knocked on that door, and just see if that door opens. And like I say, West Yorkshire Police have been so supportive in making adjustments, sitting down and you know, proper risk assessments and things like that, that, you know, it could have been very easy for me to think, do you know what, this is my time done in the police force. But no. So again, and that's not just around sight loss, that's around people with disabilities. You know, we live in a world now where there's so much assistive technology that can help people, and it's not just a case of sort of bumbling through either. You know, this is, I've been given opportunities, I've done things around the National Police Air Service that no one can say they've done, I've been on courses, so it's about not just sort of, oh, thanks very much, I'm here and I'll just sort of sit in the corner and keep quiet. It's excelling and still have ambitions of promotion.
Throughout his years at West Yorkshire Police, Inspector Rook has been involved in many major changes and significant moments in the force's history. He received a Chief Constable's commendation for Operation Rocky, which was one of the longest firearms operations conducted in West Yorkshire. He also generated income for the force by designing a gun box and was also pivotal in training. After losing most of the sight in his right eye, Inspector Rook was back on shift as soon as he could. He assisted with rebranding and setting up the first operations centre for the National Police Air Service. He also designed a new shift pattern which reduced sickness levels, as well as developing an easy task system as a replacement command and control system, saving the force thousands of pounds. In the past year, West Yorkshire Police have reaffirmed its commitment to recruit more police officers, and as part of this, the force is keen to receive applications from people from all different backgrounds and diverse groups to reflect a better representation of the communities they serve. Nick is now an executive member of the West Yorkshire Police Disability Association, which he is proud to be part of.
So that's something I'm really passionate about. So that's something I do in my own time with a real great amount of people. So again, that's about this development and positive approach to disability. In my professional career, I have still got real aspirations of going for promotion. I still want to be a real part of the organisational change. I'm doing some work at the moment around firearms licensing. Like I say, I designed and implemented the command hub for the National Police Air Service that serves the whole country. So again, and I also want to act as you know, if I can inspire somebody, if there's someone out there today that listens to this, or somebody in school that's been told you'll never be anything, I hope they can look at me and think, do you know what, it's up to me and I can make that difference. And I'm not going to take no for an answer. If people are willing to work hard, and that's what I do, I just want to inspire people and give them the confidence to go out there and be as much as they can for themselves.
Find out more about Inspector Nick Rook. He's on Twitter with the following handle, @WYP_NickRook. That's Nick, NickRook. And thank you to Nick Rook for sharing his story with the Daily Connect.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Now to one of RNIB's big campaigns of the year, and that is around audio description. Now, on linear TV, that's TV channels like BBC One, BBC Two, ITV, etc., you're looking at roughly about 20 to 30% of all its programming is audio described. Now, you discount things like news and sport because those are very hard to audio describe live, but you think about dramas, soaps, documentaries, all of that. Well, those are, on the whole, a lot of those programmes are audio described, which is brilliant. Now, that's great if you've managed to record it or watch it live. However, if you go to one of the on-demand players and try to watch one of these programmes again with the audio description, that can be a challenge. And that is something RNIB is picking up in its campaign this year around audio description and accessing it on demand.
Just watch a movie and close your eyes, and you can't follow most movies with just listening. Be like, who's that? What's going on?
Police lights flash on the front of the buyer's house as Officer Callahan stands outside with Joyce and Jonathan.
Audio description is a description of the action that's going on in between the dialogue.
Inside the dark house, Hopper walks down the hallway with a flashlight.
For blind people, having that audio description, it becomes their eyes.
I definitely say Orange is the New Black, Stranger Things and Game of Thrones have been my audio description highlights.
Eleven closes her eyes. Elsewhere in the lab, the man from the photo sits at a table with a piece of paper.
I can't see anything at all. So actually, I've never had audio description on life, as it were. So having it on TV is a great start.
I use it for watching TV programmes, for films, films at home, films in the cinema.
Theatre and cinema are my favourites.
I use audio description when I go to football matches.
A lot of those little subtleties in the way a person looks or something they do with their hands is actually a massive part of the story.
Eleven steps out wearing the dress and wig. Lucas gives Dustin an impressed look as Mike gawks at her.
If it's a gentle film, they'll have perhaps a gentler voice.
Blinks, tilting his head.
And in the action films, they'll have a harder edge description.
It drags dried growth and a piece of shepherd's suit across the floor, leaving behind a trail of blood.
All that tension, a lot of that is based in seeing what's happening and getting a sense of the atmosphere. And that's really brought to life as well by audio description.
I don't watch anything without audio description.
I'm an absolute addict of audio description. I OD on AD.
For more information, call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999, or visit audiodescription.org.uk. Hashtag AD support.
So do check out the video, which you can see that video on YouTube and also on RNIB's website, rnib.org.uk. We thought we'd canvass your views on this as you told us about what you think about audio description on demand and whether or not it's something that you want.
Hey, yeah, it's really, really important. And I think the more you have AD, I think actually the more you want it and want to watch programmes with it. So I don't know, I feel that if something hasn't got AD on it, I, you know, quite likely might not watch it. But I was really impressed the other day. I think we were on Challenge or something, and Catchphrase had AD. And when I never understood what the game show Catchphrase was all about. I never even really understood what you did. I would always zone it out because I couldn't do it. But they had they had all the words and stuff on there, and it was amazing actually being able to be, you know, there was something quite spectacular about, you know, it's a small thing, but it was really good. But it would be fantastic if On Demand had AD. I'd really, really like to see that happen.
I'm kind of surprised that audio description seems to be considered as an afterthought, because it's essential. Especially for me, well, especially for anyone who watches films or, you know, what likes to watch TV. I don't watch a lot of TV. I binge watch some TV shows, but mostly films. And I'll have to say, without audio description, I wouldn't have been able to enjoy them. Without audio description, I probably wouldn't have been able to finish my course. I studied creative writing, and one of the modules on it was screenwriting. And because of audio description, I was able to pass that course. Because I incorporated audio, you know, the audio description text script into how I was to write a film script or on a TV show. And from, again, I don't know how much to stress this, but audio description is like a part of a film. It's as if it's inseparable. It's not, audio description and film. It's they're one, as far as I'm concerned. So it's blended so much in the background, and it's given so much information that I just feel like both can't be inseparable.
I've moved away from TV, and the most often way I listen to TV now is with the BBC iPlayer app. Of course, tapping on the audio descriptions part in the menu. That's a fantastic feature. I'm hoping that Sky are going to catch up someday, because I do pay for that, but I really don't think they're anywhere near as good.
It's absolutely vital. I'll give you one example. It wasn't on the telly, though. I went to the cinema to watch Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, I think. It's one of the Harry Potter-type films. That film would have been totally, for me, I just wouldn't have been able to follow it, right from almost the word go. It's so, so lively, and there's so much going on. You would have got plenty of noise and stuff, but it was, you know, imperative with that film anyway that audio description was there. And I have to say, the audio description was very good. I couldn't say very much for the comfort of the headset, but, you know, you can't have it all, mate.
Pipeline. Joseph Elliott
Bruce. On the audio description front, I can't add much more than what everybody else has said. For me, it is the difference between enjoying TV with the family and kind of zoning out and starting to play with my iPod or iPhone. I'm not paying any attention to the TV whatsoever. So it's very important, as you can well imagine. And the idea of being able to put it down with catch-up or on-demand would be absolutely fantastic. I missed a few Red Dwarf episodes on the telly, which is audio-described. And then I had to go and flick the catch-up to actually watch it. And there was no audio description with that. And just wasn't the same TV programme anymore. It just, you know, it wasn't as enjoyable without it. In fact, I didn't watch it all. Because I didn't have a clue what was going on half the time. So, yeah. Basically, when I use my Sky Plus app to look for, you know, what I'm going to watch, I check whether it has AD or it doesn't have AD, and that's my deciding factor on whether I watch the programme or don't watch the programme. So it's extremely important for me.
You can add your voice to the mix by emailing us radio@rnib.org.uk or find us on Facebook or Twitter.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now time to find out about one of RNIB Connect's events coming up this month. Here's Simon Pauly.
Now, up in Scotland, we've got an event taking place on the 20th of December. And here to tell us more, Gozi Jo Odigwe is RNIB Community Facilitator with RNIB Scotland. Hi, Gozi.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So tell us what we've got coming up.
I've been invited along to an event in Amina in Glasgow. So I've had a long relationship with Amina. Amina is a community-based organisation that has supported Muslim women in a variety of different ways for a number of years. And I've worked very closely with the project over the 12 years that I've been with RNIB. Amina now exists not only in Glasgow, but in Dundee and in Edinburgh. So they're increasing their presence in some of the major cities, and they're a strategic partner to the Scottish Government. On the 20th, they're holding a brunch, a festive brunch, which is essentially an opportunity for any organisation to come along, to meet with staff and with trustees, and to see about collaborations into 2019. one of the key things that I'm quite keen to focus on is raising awareness of eye health amongst staff and service users. So I think there'll be some opportunities to put some dates in the diary for next year with that in mind.
And is the message getting out there, do you think, Gosie? Are we getting that message, and is RNIB getting a good response in these various different ethnic groups?
It takes time, that goes without saying. It's taken us a number of years to build up those really consistent and clear messages. I think, Simon, one key indicator of the success is really down to things like the passion of people from those communities wanting to become involved with RNIB, either in a volunteering capacity or in fundraising. My colleague, Jamila Sheikh, one of the Diversity Insight team, recently put on a Celebrating Diversity events, which was a fundraiser for Talking Books for RNIB, as well as an opportunity to, you know, establish links with old and existing partners and to make new links as well. And she raised £5,500 at that event, which is paying for two children's talking books and an adult talking book. And that to me is a really clear indicator of how people from different backgrounds are now beginning to really see the importance and the significance and the relevance of the work that we do, and the commitment that we've had over the years. So many projects are very time limited with particular ethnic groups. And I think people within these communities get quite weary of having a project officer, you know, airdrop in for a year, 2 years, and then disappear without much of a legacy. RNIB has always had a very strong and long-term commitment, and I'm really pleased to be at the forefront of that. Glasgow Festive Brunch, that would be an opportunity for general public, for organisations, individuals, to come along and to meet with Amina and see the work that Amina has been doing. They've been flourishing over the years, and it's testimony now that they have three locations across Scotland. You can contact myself on my mobile, which is 07 918 640 505.
Can we have the number again?
Sure. 07 918 640 505.
Well, we wish you the best for the event, Gosie. A lot of work coming up, but it seems to be coming together. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Simon. Happy Christmas when it comes.
You too. That was Gosie Jo Adigwe, who's an RNIB community facilitator.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Finally, the podcast today, we hear from Alan Russell, who tells us about one of the many charities out there that's doing its bit for blind and partially sighted people as it looks back on 2018.
We are looking back at 2018 with lots of sight loss charities around the UK and around the world, but we thought we'd focus on some sport. And for many years now, we've followed the creation and the progress and growth of Scottish Disability Golf Partnership. Now, there's been a lot of changes here. So to tell us more, we have with us Jim Gales.
That's great, Alan. Thanks for the opportunity.
So the club itself started out with golf, sort of introducing it to people with disabilities and growing the game and growing people's interest. And it's grown considerably over the years. But if we were to look at 2018, what's been some of the big changes or the big highlights?
Well, right at the beginning of the year, in January, we were still Scottish Disability Golf Partnership. And our sister charity during the winter, if you like, we were the Disabled Curler Scotland. And it was primarily the same people that were administering both charities. So what we did in January was get in touch with Oscar, a charity regulator, get all the paperwork tidied up, and we then became Scottish Disability Golf and Curling. And that was second week in January, and since then the SDGC doubled everything. We've now got over 60 events every year. We've got a programme in place for both the curling and the golf where we can take individuals along to their local rink, their local professional or coach, and get them some lessons. And that could be somebody who's absolutely never touched a curling stone before, never touched a golf club, and given everybody the chance to learn about the game and find initially whether they like it, of course. You know, not everybody likes the sport, but we want to get them out there and give them a chance to try it. So we'll get them out there. And that lasts for most of the year. They can take it one at a time. They can take three at a time. It's entirely up to the individual. And then after the curling or the golf lessons, we'll get them out there and either on the ice or on the golf course, get a few holes in or a few sheets of ice to play, and just gradually bring everybody in on board, and they can play competitions and bring things on and take from the programme what we organise, what they wish.
If we were to take a highlight then, Jim, for 2018 from, say, the golf and the curling, what would you say has been the kind of standout ones this year?
I think for the curling, at the beginning of this year, we had a team come across from Canada. We played 13 games of curling in 1 week in and around Edinburgh, Fife, Stirlingshire, and basically looked after them really well. And next year, they'll give us the chance to pop across to Canada. That's probably the highlight of the curling. Although we have brought in a lot of junior members, and that's always good for the future of the game. For the golf, I think undoubtedly it was the Scotland-England match, which Scotland managed to win at this particular occasion. And it was a bit of a large victory, shall we say. It was 17-7. And that's our Ryder Cup-style format. Well, we shouldn't really call it Ryder Cup. It's Solheim Cup or Ryder Cup, because there's ladies and gents play in the competition. And that's the traditional match play type competition where there's foursomes, four balls and singles match play. And obviously beginners wouldn't be taking part in that, but that's a target for the beginners to aim for, you know, to develop their golf game, their golf skills, and hopefully through the order of merit qualify for one of the team events that we do. We've received quite a lot of recognition this year through the golf's governing bodies and even the UK Parliament. We took a team across to Florida for another Ryder Cup style competition. This one's only every 4 years, and that was a Europe v United States competition. And I took a whole load of people from Germany, Wales, Northern Ireland, England, Scotland, etc., over to the States. And we did the same again as we did with the English. I'm afraid Europe trounced the United States team, so they've been very quiet since. But that was a competition, a high that we came back. And our local MP put an early day motion into the UK Parliament. So we've got quite a bit of a boost with a prestigious mention in the annals of history, really, as a UK parliamentary motion. We've received some good feedback from golf's governing bodies like the Royal and Ancient. They've supported our golf lessons programme this year. And we've also been in touch with the likes of Scottish Golf and English Golf and arranged meetings to develop the status of our Scottish Open Championship, because that's what we've done in the last few years, is totally restructure our season. So we've got a set number of competitions now, charity days, all this type of thing. But we've also reintroduced our Scottish Open, and our Phoenix Cup, which is a Ryder Cup style event, is an annual. So they're going to be taking place every year now.
Looking ahead then, Jim, to 2019 for the golf and the curling, what would you say maybe the big events or, you know, maybe the big strides forward you're hoping for?
Next steps are going to be just to have a regular structure of golf and curling throughout the year, because nobody else does that. There's various groups around the world that have basically stolen our ideas and copied them and taken them into their own country. So we're far enough ahead now that we've, you know, is bring on more members, I suppose, is the next best thing. We've got over 1,000 members now for the golf and the curling, so we want to obviously bring them on, look after them, and bring in new people as well.
And if we were to maybe look at a highlight of your own, what would you say has been a point in 2018 that's been great for you?
Personally, to lead Team Europe across as captain, I went across in... Actually, we had a two-day event in St Andrews on the Wednesday and the Thursday, and we left for Tampa on the Friday. So it was a little bit hectic, and maybe that wound the Americans up just to see just away from a two-day competition in St Andrews, you know, the home of golf. no jealousy at all. And then we had a couple of days of acclimatisation, and then we went straight into the Europe v USA competition. After day one, we were 5-1 ahead, so I thought, you know, this is potentially quite good. And then the Americans went and did exactly the same to us on day two. So after day two, it was 6 points each. We really had to go out there and turn on the golfing skills and get out there. And on that particular day, we won 7.5, 4.5. So that was quite a good thing. And to be able to raise the trophy and over my head and say to everybody, you know, well done, guys, for our team from Europe. And unlucky to the Americans. Yeah, that was probably my personal highlight for 2018.
Trophy in the air, absolutely, it must have been, Jim. We'll continue to follow the progress of Scottish disability golf and curling, Jim, but we'd like to wish everyone at SDGC a very Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, and thanks once again for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks very much, Alan, and all the very best to everybody down there at RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Jim, and to Alan. That's the podcast for today. We're back tomorrow from 10 live on air, or you can catch us in the podcast just after 5. Thanks for listening.
The Daily Connect Podcast.